Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Georgie Porgy Riding High. Pit Stop Troubles Made Him Cry. That title provided by M. Rooster on Twitter. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for asking. Delighted to be back in my regular shed with its regular dodgy audio setup and not my vacation dodgy audio setup. How are you doing?
I'm bad, Matt. The people I wanted to do well didn't do well. Stupid F1. F1's stupid and podcasting is lame. I don't want to play podcasts anymore.
Oh, dear.
No, okay. To be fair, it was a really good result and Max winning isn't as painful as it should be. There's something about the arc of the Red Bull story that's making it enjoyable to see them have success, which as a Hamfosi, that doesn't sit right.
No, I understand that. Sort of the Red Bull has managed to lose long enough that they've become underdogs once again, so you kind of root for them. But I think there may be some technical reasons, too, behind why they look so very, very, I'll use the word superior here, at this particular circuit.
And speaking of underdogs, I've always considered us to be podcasting underdogs against the Goliath press organizations that put podcasts out. And I won't quit podcasting, I think, because we hit a wonderful target. We hit, in fact, a target I would never have dreamed of setting. You know that download figures and viewer figures have been increasing. And I'm absolutely delighted that we have had some success, finally, in the iTunes charts. And I won't pretend to understand how they work, but I set a dream fantasy target for us a couple of years ago to hit the top 50 in the UK sports charts. And we haven't achieved that as of yet, but I didn't even look at the US charts because we were down at like 400. And there are, you know, much more popular sports relative to motorsport in the US. But this week, we checked it and we actually hit 50 in the US iTunes sports chart. So of all the podcasts that cover sport in the world, we were 50th in the US chart. And when I looked at it in real time, the only F1 podcast ahead of us was the F1 Nation one. So we were even ahead of Beyond the Grid. So I just want to say a massive thank you for everybody that has left us an iTunes review, who has shared it with your friends on social media. Just thank you for all of that, because it's really felt like a community push and a community effort to increase the reach of Missed Apex. I genuinely don't think we'll ever get like mainstream recognition. We don't have the contacts, we don't have the pedigree, the names, the business or the financial power, but we do have you guys, and you have flooded us with support, love, positivity and just practical help and resources to drive the project forward. You have let us continue to be an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by our race analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Gene. How's it going, Alex?
Oh, well, it was a good race today. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to getting into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, and we actually have some racing contacts to talk about. Like, we haven't been able to use my Whose Fault Is It bumper for a while, because actually the drivers have just been generally well-behaved on track. There hasn't been just cars smashing into each other that much for the last few races.
Yeah, the standards have been fantastic. And I think all the contacts were caused by the same person today. So that would be funny to talk about.
Yeah. Whose Leclerc fault was it? Is what we will call the segment today. And we're also joined by Danish broadcaster Christian Pedersen. How's it going, Christian?
Good evening, Spanners. Was it a good racing day?
No, your voice on that mic is so much better than mine. You've gone into full, like, bassy. That's so beautiful. I don't want you on the show anymore.
I can go a little higher. Is that better?
That would make me very happy.
Good evening. It's so good to be here on the podcast.
No, fine. Do your stupid, sexy Danish accent. That's okay. But
Thank you.
What I was saying to Matt was, you know, I'm not upset by the challenge to Lewis Hamilton. Certainly not as upset as I thought I would be as someone who is hoping Hamilton will go and win his eighth title. I think because, A, we've got a kind of comeback story from Red Bull, but also we've got like a real coming of age story from Verstappen as well.
It's he could do like 100 race victories this year, and he could do his eighth championship. So he could basically break all the essential records. And someone's putting a leg in front of him here called Max, and that is what makes it all so exciting. And it's only half a year until we see the 2022 cars on top of that. So everything is just perfect, basically, from a F1 fan perspective.
And this race, Alex, again, you know, it's a timing screen classic. It was, a lot of it was from looking at the lap times and the lap charts. It wasn't so different to Paul Ricard. It's just, I think there wasn't just that sparking incident that set it all off.
Yeah, to be honest, it was one of those races where if you'd changed the liveries on the car, you could have been convinced it was 2020 or 2019. That's the kind of race we had today. But we go back into your question about your statement regarding you're not really mad about the person you're not wanting to winning.
Yeah,
I think it's because actually, for the first time ever in Formula One, at least the top half of the grid, I like all of them.
Well,
and yeah, that doesn't normally happen. You know, I found myself cheering on Leclerc and cheering on Sainz. I have never cheered a Ferrari in my life, but I like the drivers. Mm. So I'm a weird kind of neutral this year. Yes, okay, as a Hamilton fan, I do want Hamilton to claim his eighth title because it would just be fantastic. But I feel more of a neutral this year just because I love all the drivers at the moment. It's great.
I know I joke about Ferrari being the Death Star and, you know, do Tifosi love their children, not like we do. I know I do all that kind of stuff. But actually, if you look at the modern teams, especially the top four, you know, you've got McLaren and Zak Brown and Seidel. You've got Christian Horner, Max Verstappen, Perez, all very likable. Toto Wolff, extremely charismatic. Lewis Hamilton as well. It's it's hard to pick out a bad guy, isn't it, in this current F1 grid? I mean, you have to go quite far down. We have to go to the white cars, don't we? Down the bottom of it.
Yeah, we kind of have to go down that far as grid, but we won't talk about it. I mean, even Lance Stroll, I've warmed to Lance, and he pulled the best move of the race today, and we'll talk about that later. So, you know, Formula One is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to watch at the moment because it's just brilliant.
Yay, Formula One. Okay, fine. I won't abandon Formula One just because I didn't get exactly the result I wanted. A little bit of stuff to cover in qualifying. Okay, Matt, why don't you get us out of the garage?
Shall I try it in second gear and spin like a certain driver did?
What happened there? I got a message from, do you know what? I'm going to tell tales. I got a message from Matthew Carter when that happened. And he messaged us in a little group chat we've got. And he just went, did Bottas just give up? Like, it just seemed like, wow, what else could go wrong? Oh gosh, we're going to get criticized for Bottas hate. And I am sorry for that. We will try to be more considerate of how that has made people feel. But geez, I've not seen anything like that in a while, Alex. Just spinning it up in the pits. And that could have been so different.
The last time we saw that was Grosjean at Silverstone when he came out and spanked it into the wall. But yeah, you know, we can get accused of Grosjean of Bottas hate, but You can't spin out the pit lane in a practice session and get away with that and not get ridiculed for it. And, you know, it wasn't intentional, but it's still dangerous if you spin in the pit lane. So the penalty was worth it as well.
Of course, you shouldn't spin in the pit lane. That is no doubt. But what I find a little interesting was how everyone is, it seems like everyone is just looking for something they can storm on, if you know what I mean. So when Crofty saw this, his first reaction on Sky was, you can't have that. People shouldn't do that. Imagine if people got hurt in the pit lane, like, yada, yada, yada. But this is Formula One. It's racing. It's the pit lane. It's where the fastest cars in the world. I know everyone is going to go, but human lives and all. But there needs to be an element of danger to Formula One. And he didn't do that on purpose. And he didn't try to kill anyone. And they're doing 60 kilometers an hour, I think. So they're already reasonably safe. I just thought that this was just, everyone was just going crazy about a minor, small, tiny thing that is very race related and will happen eventually. And that is just the nature of Formula One.
Okay. So firstly, Christian, your attempt to disguise a profanity was awful. So don't worry, I'll pick that up in the edit.
Sheets are what you put on your bed. You put on your bed.
Okay, fine.
I sleep in sheets.
Okay, and Matt, it is worth noting that in Denmark, you can sometimes just die from just walking outside because the air will just murder you. So I'm not as safety blasé as our friend Christian here. When something is identified as dangerous, I'm more than happy to take action and treat it seriously, because you know the guys there are not in, you know, they're not in body armor. If a car had come scything through, it would have been pretty emotional.
Well, yeah, we have seen people in the pit lane get injured before when cars have missed their mark. But I'm going to try a little thought experiment. Perhaps the McLaren pit crew shouldn't just be hanging out in general in the pit lane while cars are being released, because that might also be kind of dangerous. I'll start there.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to disagree with one particular comment that you made, which was F1 has to be an element of danger. I don't watch F1 for danger at all. I watch F1 for the sport and for seeing the best engineered cars being driven around the track by the best drivers in the world. That's why I watch it. I don't, danger does not come into me at all.
I would say danger is you can't have racing without danger. If you don't have danger, if danger is not a part of the racing, then I think you take away a major ingredient. I'm not saying that anyone should get hurt. I'm not saying that at all. But from my limited racing experience, what makes the really fast drivers fast is they go beyond limits that I feel unsafe.
Oh, okay.
So they are constantly in that unsafe area, and that is the nature of it. So I'm just going to agree with Matt and say maybe no people in the pit lane unless you have a pit stop.
I think the pit lane's a little bit different, Matt. I mean, do we know why that happened then? Interesting you said it was in second gear. Surely second gear makes it safer.
You would think so. And this is where, for those of you who think we're just going to hate on Valtteri the whole time, this was Mercedes doing an experiment. At least one other team is launching in second gear from the pit lane. And as you may know from recent political controversies, such as TD22A/96BJQ or whatever it was, they are behind in the pit stop battle. And I think they were trying to find some extra time in the pit lane. What I'm immediately wondering is, did they bother to test this out before they just simply asked Bottas to launch in second from the pit lane? Because from the result, I'm thinking maybe they didn't.
Okay. And I do think the penalty was justified. I agree with Christian. You know, it clearly wasn't deliberate. He's not trying to hurt anyone. But that penalty says, hey, guys, if you spin it up and lose it next to mechanics in the pit lane, you're going to get a penalty. Try not to do that. Getting into qualifying itself, a really dominant performance by Red Bull. And I feel, Matt, like they're trying to kind of do down their qualifying pace. So when there was interviews with Verstappen afterwards, he's saying things like, oh, you know, we managed to just read the conditions really well. We managed to get the tyre prep just right. It's like, no, you're just a rocket right now.
Well, they are. And I think the circuit very much flatters their car. Not in the sense that their car might be worse than Mercedes right now, because clearly at this circuit, I don't think you can make that argument. But I think a lot of things have come together to really give them a pretty big edge at this specific circuit. And I guess the only other thing we could talk about is Bottas, who now has a penalty and yet is still impeded by Tsunoda, thereby creating a penalty for him as well. But the most important thing I want to mention is that Hamilton actually took three runs in Q3 to try and get the better of Verstappen.
Now, I thought that was interesting. I didn't read that as trying to get the better of Verstappen per se. I wondered if it was because there's been so many red flags in qualifying, the idea was just to get out quickly to avoid that. Because Christian, I think he did the same in Q1, Q2 and Q3, made sure he was out there on his own.
The interesting part is this was the first sign that Mercedes was trying something different. They needed a different approach to beat Red Bull this weekend than they knew it. So they had to go out on different times and they had to just try different things as they did in Barcelona where it worked. But it seems the deficit is too big now to make the small things work.
And interesting, towards the end of Q3, you saw Hamilton. I think the conditions had kind of gone away from the first bunch of runs. So Hamilton's down a little bit and he's just like, right, I'm just going to absolutely fling this at turn 10, see what I can do. And actually Bottas ends up putting in a stonker of a lap and picking up second, which makes that penalty all the more frustrating for him.
Yeah, it did, because imagine the race we'd have had with Bottas second and Hamilton third and Perez, what, fifth?
It would have been fifth, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been quite a different start to the whole affair. And it's worth noting, too, that Lewis, on his last lap, he passed rather a large number of cars, which I don't think helped his tire prep at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think with regards to Lewis's qualifying, the reason he went and did three runs is because I just don't think he was happy. He didn't look comfortable in any session, in any of his laps. All his laps looked a little bit scruffy. He had a lockup in Q2, wasn't it? The beginning of Q2, had a lockup in turn three. And I just think he just wanted that extra lap to have a go on his own. The thing I never got answered, though, was all of those three runs in Q3, were they all on new tires?
Yeah.
I believe he'd saved an extra set, yes.
Wow, okay, fine. That's quite good then, to manage actually have that many tires, because they don't normally have enough tires for that kind of thing. But as far as Bottas being ahead, if he hadn't got the penalty, if you look at the relative pace between the number ones and the number twos at Red Bull and Mercedes today, I don't think there's anything that either number two could have done to prevent their number one from winning today. Their number one from being ahead today.
Christian.
And the good thing about it is now we get to see what we've been missing. Lewis Hamilton fighting for it and making small mistakes. He's going to the limit and sometimes over. And that is what we've been waiting for quite some time, actually.
And in qualifying, Matt, we've actually not seen mistakes from Verstappen for some time. I'm scrambling back in my mind to think of when he looked like he's fluffed a qualifying session. If there's been the odd one, fair enough. But he has actually been really consistent in qualifying, which is something that I have consistently criticized Lewis Hamilton for, is delivering that Q3 performance, getting the banker in and then nailing the lap. Hamilton seems to be all or nothing, whereas at the minute, Verstappen is just all, every time.
Yeah, he's quite comfortable in that car, and that car is quite comfortable on the circuit. In fact, I believe both of his lap times would have won him pole position, although the first was the quickest.
Mm-hmm. And excellent. All right, let's go look at the young Brits, Alex. Let's do our Brit fussiness. Don't worry, this is the good bit where Russell still has hopes and dreams. Don't worry. Russell ended up qualifying in an 11th by 1/1,000,000th of a second. He was off of getting into Q3. Would that have been his first Q3?
Yes, would have been his first Q3. Oh, well, bar the day that he was at Mac. But first Q3 in a Williams. And I'm just more and more impressed by this guy. Every single qualifying session he does, and he was even more impressive for the few laps that he got to do in the race today. And you know, I'm done with Bottas now, and George has to be in that seat. I mean, to be fair, he could be in that seat from next week, as far as I'm concerned, and I'd be happy about it, because he's ready for the big time. And in my mind, and I've been saying this for probably a couple of years now, he's up there. He is the real deal. He is with Leclerc and knocking on the door of Max Verstappen, talent-wise, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, but Russell isn't doing... He's getting the maximum out of the Williams. That's great. But just imagine if you'd have had even another semi-talent. No offence to Latifi, I do apologise. But you know, if you'd have had a Gasly or a Norris in that second Williams seat, you would have had two Williams in Q2 probably most of the time. He is. I don't want to use the term, you know, he's fighting bums, so he looks good. But because I know Kubica was a great driver in his prime, but you know, he is obviously being flattered at the moment, Alex. These qualifying performances, they're not like some godlike, you know, exceeding of the car.
The problem is we'll never know. All we can go on is his past reputation, which is he was dominating every series that he's ever been in, that have included Charles Leclerc, that have included Lando Norris, that have included all the other young talent that we've got on the grid, and he's beaten them all. But unfortunately, you know, he hasn't been able to get into a car that he can really prove it on a whole race weekend and just prove it on a Saturday.
I want to make 2 points about Austria. One is it's a very short track. So I think at one point in qualification, yes, there was 7/10 between 17 and pole.
Yeah.
So that is one thing. And the other thing is Williams have always been really, really strong at Austria. I think actually the first year they did the races there, wasn't it Massa in the Williams who was pole position, or maybe it was Bottas. Anyway, the Williams has always been good there. So I'm not taking any way away from Russell
sounds
at
like
all.
It.
I think he deserves all the praise he gets, but it's a good track for Williams traditionally.
Okay, Matt.
Oh, I was just going to mention the historical oddity that Ocon actually beat Verstappen in a series, and he would be the only one on the current grid that has done so.
But, okay, you know, okay. If I was you, I'd be taking Ocon wins from like 4 years ago as well. So I completely understand. Oh, I'm sorry, Matt. I'm sorry. We'll talk about that. Look, guys, we are going to make sure we do get through a bit of the grid, a bit more than the front guys today. But also, we will have a pickup show on Tuesday evening as well. That will stream live to our patrons. So support us at patreon.com/missedapex. But the finished video and audio will be available to everybody on Wednesday morning. So don't panic if we don't get to your particular team or driver. We will try and pick those up on Tuesday with a fresh panel. Better than this panel, if I'm completely honest. Norris puts in another stonking performance, actually. And I think we'll dwell on Norris a bit more when we talk about the start of the race. But an absolute force he is becoming in that McLaren. But let's go on to where the race was won and lost. Yeah, Norris does feature heavily in this segment, Matt. I think we're going to make won and lost a bit more of a summary, and then we're going to go through our topics. We're going to talk about why Red Bull was so good this week. We're going to ask, could Mercedes have won it? We're going to talk about the championship connotations, why this race didn't spark in the same way as some of the races this week, the battle of the number twos, Norris, Ferrari, Alonso versus Ocon. We'll address the Russell curse. Obviously, we have to spin round 3 times, touch our chins, and then put a potato on your head to make sure the Russell curse doesn't spread to you. Kimi Raikkonen was there fighting as well. There's a political battle, a brewing, and also we can talk about the upgrade battle as well. And we've got whose fault is it to play? But to start with, Matt, let's talk about where the race was won and lost.
And let's start at the start. And with the start, I specifically mean turn 4, because that is where a young, strapping Lando Norris managed to get back round a certain person's hero, Sergio Perez, and retake third position. And this was critical, not so much because, as Christian noted, that either number two was going to make a huge difference to their number ones today, but because it trapped both Perez and Bottas behind Norris for the next 11 laps and made it essentially in two entirely separate races between the number ones, Max and Lewis, and between the number twos, Sergio and Valtteri. So that was absolutely positively an important moment in the race.
Yeah, okay. And let's go through your other won and lost points, and then we can break it down into our bullets and topic points.
Okay, yeah, that's not a problem. And then the next thing that happens is Perez, having finally gotten by Norris, has Bottas bearing down on him, and I know this one is a particular peeve of yours, and as Bottas on his medium tires is taking time out of Perez on his soft tires, Red Bull makes the call, I believe it was lap 25-26, to bring him in for new tires, and it all goes horribly wrong. And at first I thought, oh, it's the new technical directive. It has bitten Red Bull right where it counts most. But no, actually, it was just sort of a bulky left rear.
Yeah.
It
did kind of look like, oh, look, they're practicing. They're practicing for the new slow pit stops impromptu in the race.
Yeah, it looked like it. But no, it was just your usual, oh, bulky thing causes problem. And this had the effect, and this is why I think it was very important, of forcing Bottas in. Because Mercedes knew that he would be able to jump him in the pits. So in he comes the next lap. And that then prompts Lewis to come in on the following lap. And now Lewis was not having such a good ride. Both he and Max had some graining, lap 19 to 22. Lap 23, Max sets fast lap. But Lewis had just been gradually falling off and in fact was out of undercut range. They might have brought him in a little bit earlier had they not brought Bottas in to cement what they thought was the last podium position, which shows that maybe Mercedes was thinking overall championship points today and not just how do we win the race at any cost.
So I think it would be fair, I think, to say that this is the, if not the first time, this is a good example of Red Bull utterly winning it entirely on merit, on pace, and Mercedes just not having an answer. So it wasn't a case of, oh, there was an issue for Mercedes. There wasn't a strategy error. They didn't go the wrong way with setup. It feels like, Christian, this was peak Mercedes going up against peak 2021 Red Bull. And Red Bull were just amazing.
Well, obviously something happened along the way. Two races ago, something happened. I'm not sure what, but this is a quote from the post-race press conference. Lewis said this, maybe not in this exact words, but this is what he said. They have this bendy rear wing, which they have been developing for quite some time, I've been told. So, and he said something about reliable sources. So apparently this is, according to Lewis, this is something that has been going on for quite some time. And there was also a little chit-chat between Horner and Toto Wolff in the team principals conference, where Toto sort of like said, listen, Lewis is on track. He sees the car in front of him going out of the corner. He just sees the traction, and that is what he reports to us. So we have to take his word for it. We have to take his word for that is what's going on. So that is what we are basing our thoughts on. So that is where it's all coming from, and that is what they're trying to promote. But why it happens, I have no idea. I'm not sure it has anything to do with the ribbing.
And Alex, you can see on Lewis Hamilton's face, he's looking for answers, and he's just not used to being in this situation. He's used to, obviously, losing the odd race through attrition or a problem or being out-strategized. But just to see the car in front suddenly be fast, he's having to go back in his memory some way to remember like 2013 what it was like to have the Red Bulls pulling away ahead.
Looking for answers is the right word, because my understanding is he spent 5.5 hours in the sim this week. And as you know, we had an interview with Lewis earlier in the year, you do use the sim. I think he said if he does 20 laps a year, it's a lot. So I think because Merck haven't been making any upgrades, there hasn't been a significant upgrade to that car since the second round. I think they're having to work on setup, and that's the only thing they can do. And the only thing they can do to work on setup is through the sim. And Lewis is like, well, I'm not letting anyone else do that work for me, and I'm going to do it. And he even sort of mentioned to it during an interview where he said, it's been a really busy week, where I think he has just been busting his backside to try and figure out and gain the gap because the team isn't bringing anything to the car to add to the speed.
So I have some thoughts about that, but I think maybe we best discuss them when we talk about the battle.
Yeah, okay.
Between Mercedes and Red Bull. And let's move on to the final and most important part, my last critical point here, which is the second pit stop for Perez. And all right, so admittedly, it's not that crucial for the battle between Max and Lewis, but for the third podium spot, it kind of was. And they pit Perez, put him on tires. You look at the gap going down, and you think immediately, oh my, he might actually catch Valtteri. And in fact, he does catch him. He's less than a second off going into the final lap, and Bottas barely finishes the race ahead of him by half a second. And it was important because Perez took fast lap which meant that Mercedes now was faced with the choice of pinning Lewis to take that point back, which they ultimately did, which meant that takes some of the pressure off Max, although Max was 8, 9, 10 seconds up the road anyway. It was something they did before they realized they didn't need to do it, is kind of what I'm trying to say here.
There wasn't any pressure, because I will argue now, I think Red Bull were completely in control of this race. The performance was such that they had an answer for everything. And also right up front, I don't think Red Bull could do this, could be in this position, if it wasn't for the performances Max Verstappen is putting in. Red Bull, to deliver, needed a top driver. There's so much chat of, oh, it's just the car, it's just the car. You can't do anything without the right car. But also teams can't do anything without the right driver. Williams are getting these eye-catching results, possibly because they've got George Russell. Mercedes have been able to do things other teams haven't been able to do because they've got Lewis Hamilton. You can see what teams have done with a utility driver such as Sergio Perez, who's got like a special set of skills. And in this case, Red Bull wouldn't be able to do what they're doing, I don't think, if they didn't have someone of Verstappen's quality. So I think we just need to acknowledge that there has been a question mark of, he's good, Verstappen, he can win a race, but can he do it at the top? Can he fight for a championship? Can he control a race with the top equipment? Yeah, he can.
Yeah, he can. In Bahrain, in the first race, not his answer to question. But here's why I think this was also critical, is because by putting Sergio so far back, you've now left Valtteri essentially alone on a track to drive consistent, fast laps. And if there's anything that he is more or less relatively good at, it is that. Contrast that, had he stayed on track, you would have had Perez right behind him, harassing him as he tried to make his way through all of the back markers. And I don't know, maybe Red Bull might have had a better chance at that final podium spot had they not made that move.
I think it's fairly easy to see. You have basically, you have three races today, and you have had three races for the last couple of races. You have up front Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen just doing something magical no one else can. And then you have Perez and Bottas driving the car to its maximum. And then you have the rest of the field, basically. Today, it was basically three races. And I mean, that just shows the uniqueness of both Hamilton and Max Verstappen. With the fastest cars and their talents, they are right now showing us maybe some of the best racing possible.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about why they're able to do this, and why Red Bull were able to, with the help of Max Verstappen at a cockpit that he feels very comfortable in, why they were able to do this. So they're talking on the team radio at Mercedes a lot about this quarter of a second straight line speed advantage. There's some talk of the Honda coming up with a reliability upgrade that allows them to push their power unit harder. But bottom line is, they seem better in the slow speed corners. So they must have some mechanical grip that lets them maybe run a bit of a lower downforce as well. Mercedes still seem to have an advantage in the high speed corners, so they are probably looking forward to Silverstone. But why? Why are Red Bull able to have this power? Yeah, I'm asking you, Matt. I'm not asking those mugs. Come on.
Fair enough. Well,
I don't know.
Exactly.
I'll start with the reliability upgrade. It was a genuine reliability upgrade. But what that lets them do is change the maps. They can run more power longer. So when we hear Mercedes say, oh, when all of Mercedes says, oh, they're gaining 0.2 on every straight, what I'm hearing is, we're going to complain to the FIA about that pretty soon, just like we did with the rear wings. This is part of the larger political battle that Mercedes is trying to fight, getting Red Bull pinned back by regulations so they have a better shot.
I'm just saying, if you only have to watch a couple of episodes of Drive to Survive to see that Horn is constantly going around looking at cars going, is that legal? Have you seen what they're doing with the things? They're all at it.
What is it, 2013 Silverstone with the exploding tires? They were up to the same games even back then. It is as old as the sport itself. That said, let's consider for a moment the regulation changes we had coming into this year, particularly at the back of the car where we lost some of the floor and we had some of the diffuser area taken away from us. Now, Red Bull runs a high rate concept, which means that some of what they lost, they can recover by running at a steeper angle, because we're talking about a total volume here. Mercedes runs a low rate concept, which means they can't really raise too much before their entire aerodynamic concept just stops working. And this, I think, has given Red Bull an advantage, particularly on circuits like this one here at the Red Bull Ring that are rear limited. And let's not forget, it was very rear limited. The graining that we saw Verstappen get over, I don't think Hamilton was ever able to get through because they're not able to work their fronts as effectively deeper into the stents. And yeah, it just causes them to lose that performance.
Yeah, there might be something track specific in the, you know, the mechanical grip that Red Bull seem to have always had in their pocket here is particularly well rewarded. If they've got a competitive engine now as well, they're able to run some lower downforce. I don't think that's beyond doubt. Someone's mentioning in the chat that they ran lower downforce on the rear wings. I think that's accepted. It's just, are you able to run lower downforce without compromising too much in the corners? And in the slow speed corners, Red Bull could live with that lower wing, whereas a team like, for example, like Williams in 2014, they just basically, it was only there for decoration, wasn't it, the wings, and they just did 14 rocket launches a race.
Yeah, and I think we even heard Hamilton after the race saying that they may have just shaded a little bit too much towards qualifying pace.
Yeah, interesting.
And that wound up catching them out once, because you can't imagine how much heavier those cars are when the tanks are full, and at that pace, what it does to the tires is really pretty, well, savage is the word I would use.
Also, if we look a little bit historically at the circuit, since we've been back here, Mercedes are hit and miss here. They either have an amazing race or have a not very good race here. They've had lots of problems with overheating. And I mean, this was the last time, this track was the last time they had a double DNF for both their cars here. So I do think that Merck aren't particularly strong here. It'll be interesting what happens when we get to Silverstone. But at the end of the day, Red Bull just bossing it and doing a great job.
Yeah, and speaking of bossing it, Alex, you and I were talking before the show about the gap up front, because something in our back of our heads over the last 7 years, we assumed that that was Lewis Hamilton choosing to, say, keep a three-second gap to Verstappen.
Yeah, and it looks like Verstappen did that to Lewis today.
It does.
Because, you know, as a lot of us do, we sit there and we watch the times. And every single time it got to sort of like a 3 second gap, I was like, okay, Lewis is starting to lose ground. And all of a sudden, you put in some good laps. I'm like, oh, okay, now he's coming. And then 2 laps later, Max will pull out a whole bunch of laps and increase the gap even further. Max had this so under control today. It was a real class performance from Max today. He did a fantastic job. Not a single error all weekend. Deserves every single plaudit that he can be offered this weekend.
So it's interesting, the behavior of cars when they're in control. So Lewis Hamilton, when he's controlling the pace from second place, which has happened, he tends to sit like within 2 seconds. So he's saving his tires, but he's there ready to pounce. When he's ahead, Mercedes seem to have gone for this tactic of about 5 seconds, which means they're not chewing up their tires too much by disappearing off into the lead, but they're also able to respond to an undercut Paul Ricard side. But in the olden days, like Vettel used to just sit there and build up a pit stop gap, and he would just go woof, and he'd go, and he'd have a whole pit stop free 20 seconds into the lead. Mercedes have not generally done that, and I think that might have got them into a bit of trouble now that Red Bull are much closer and maybe even ahead. So I think we'll have to see in future, Alex, when Hamilton does get ahead, if he's got a bit of pace, I don't think they can afford to let Red Bull be 3-4 seconds ahead. If we get to Silverstone and Merck's the fastest car and he gets in the lead, they've got to just disappear now. They've got to Red Bull Vettel this. But yeah, it was interesting to see Verstappen controlling that pace today.
I think that's why you saw Lewis all over the back of Max at Spain.
Yeah.
Because he knew he can't let Max get away. And he also knows that Max is better than the competition that he's been up against the last few years.
Yes.
And, you know, the other drivers, he could have given them an inch and they won't take a mile. If he gives Max an inch, he'll take 3 miles. So he has to, and you know, Lewis was saying he was absolutely on the limit today. And we even saw him very nearly have a spin today, which was incredible car control to save that, because he should have ended up in the wall. But yeah, he's very aware of the threat that Max Verstappen poses.
Actually, Verstappen almost had a spin as well. They didn't show it on TV, but he called it back. It was just maybe a few laps before people started talking about wind. So I think they were both initially going full on, but it was so obvious that he just had those 250, 30, hundreds on Hamilton all day long.
Yep, man.
There was nothing you could do. But I just wanted to add, in Austria, you don't really get a big difference from undercutting or overcutting. That is what probably made the race a little less exciting than we wanted to, because you didn't have that element. But it was still a exciting race, though, I think. But that didn't change, couldn't change anything between the two leading drivers.
Just to add a quick note of historical context from Samathos in the chat room, in the years where other teams were competitive, Mercedes, 17, 18, 19, and obviously this year, Mercedes have never had an advantage at Austria.
Fair enough. Okay, so where could Mercedes have won it? What would have happened for Mercedes to have really challenged today? And Alex, you're shaking your head, and I'm inclined to agree with you. On this track, in these circumstances, I don't think there's anything they could have done. I think we needed either rain, much more abrasive tires that went away, to open up some pit strategy. And even then, Red Bull might have had them covered. It would have just given them an option, or Bottas up there between the two of them. But I'm struggling to find a window where Mercedes could have won today.
Max binning it, or the car failing.
Oh, okay.
I literally don't see anything else. I mean, if there was rain, if you want to talk about other scenarios within the race, not the bounds that we actually had today, rain, it would have been closer, because we know how good Lewis is in the wet. We know how good Max is in the wet, and it still would have been good. And I think it would have been closer. I'm not going to talk about tyres being different, because they weren't, and they weren't going to be. But based on what we had today, there was nothing. I don't think, even if Mercedes had gone for an alternate strategy and pitted early and gone for the two-stop, I still don't think they would have done it.
I tend to agree. The perfect safety car that happens after Max has passed the pit entrance, but before Lewis gets there, that might have done it. Choosing the wrong time to come in for your rain tire, maybe that would have done it. Beyond that, they had the just crushing advantage, not in an obvious way, but in a slow 71 lap kind of way.
Okay, so let's just finish up talking about that top battle. Let's talk about the championship and how that is shaping up. Let's see if we can have some hope for the Hamfossi, because it's looking ominous, isn't it? It is looking ominous. We've still got this kind of PTSD of the Red Bull 2010 to 2013 era, that when they look like this, when they've got the bit between their teeth, that they're going to be unstoppable. I've heard people comparing this to Vettel 2013, where after Silverstone, they disappeared. So a little bit of hope for us Hamfossi, Alex. This is how desperate I am for some hope. I went to racefans.net and looked at the driver points for the races, and I did my own maths. And in 2017, at this point, Sebastian Vettel was up by 16 points. And Max is currently up by 18 points. And of course, Hamilton went on to win that 2017 title quite comfortably. So whilst it's looking ominous, it certainly isn't over.
First of all, I think Max is better driver than Seb in 2018.
Yeah, well, you're ruining it, but okay.
But unfortunately, also, the other thing that's different, and I have this on very good authority, Red Bull aren't stopping development on this car. They've still got at least 20% of their team working on this car at the moment. And Mercedes, Toto Wolff has said it multiple times this weekend, we're not developing the car. Where can Merck make it up? It just has to be Lewis trying as hard as he can.
It absolutely does have to be that. And I love this, because this is part of the 2022 battle already happening in 2021. And this is Red Bull making Mercedes, or trying to draw Mercedes into spending resource on this year's car to protect Lewis's shot at the eighth and never done before World Drivers' Championship, their own run of Constructors' Championship. Oh, it's all on the table.
It's that tricky eighth championship, isn't it? That difficult eighth album.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I don't believe for a second that the Mercedes are not bringing upgrades. So they might not be putting 20% of their team to finding necessarily like new development paths, but I can't believe, Matt, that there's going to be like no new front wing coming up, that they've not had a progression plan where they go, if we find a gains here, we've already got an idea what we would print in a wing. They might not be developing a new aero philosophy, but I just call absolute 100% BS, that they're not going to turn up with some upgrades at some point.
Well, that might be a question I can ask Summers in a couple of weeks when we have our next little chat. But to my knowledge, Alex is essentially correct. Anything that's shown up after the second race of the year has been something that had already been on the designing board and just not printed or made yet. And they're really just putting it all into the 2022 basket.
I think what Toto is talking about is they are not starting down new avenues. Looking for new opportunities with the current car. You are optimizing what you got. And if you see like a new detail on another competitive car and you can adapt to it, of course you will, because that is what the production crew will do.
Mm-hmm. And quick one. What was Summers going on about when he was saying that the aero regulations now are that you lose wind tunnel time? Basically, the better you do, the more successful you are.
I cannot believe you were foolish enough to ask me this question.
Oh, okay. Everyone, take a 5-minute break. Everyone else, take five, guys. We're going to talk about the aero thing.
Espresso.
There are new limits in effect. For the first time ever, we've seen something that might resemble a balance of performance where the top teams are pegged back with the total amount of testing time they have. And the bottom teams are given extra testing time, and that calculation happens at the end of June, which means that based on its first place position, Red Bull will have 90%, Mercedes 92.5%, McLaren 95%, Ferrari 97.5%, AlphaTauri wins with 100%, your normal amount of testing. And then below that, you go Aston at 102, Alpine 105, Alfa Romeo 107.5, Williams 110, and our friends Haas are now going to win because they get 112.5% of the testing time of AlphaTauri.
I can't believe you read all the percentages out. Okay, good. That sounds interesting, and we'll get Summers on to give us the lowdown on that. We're going to move down the grid a little bit. We can combine two topics actually together. We can combine why the race didn't quite kick off with talking about Lando Norris and his performance. I think one of the reasons that the race didn't have that spark that made it explode was that Lando Norris ruined everything and just had that absolutely fantastic battle with Sergio Perez. I think Alex, it's probably fair on balance to say Norris was the better racer in that scenario. I think he's very impressive wheel to wheel, is Lando Norris. Obviously, Perez has got the better car as well. But let's start with turn one, where I feel a little bit robbed as a Perez fan. So Perez gets down the inside, runs him wide, to be fair, a move we've seen over and over again from the likes of Verstappen and Hamilton. And Norris just goes off, keeps the momentum, and is able to keep the place. So I felt a bit like, oi, what are you doing? Oi, Lando lad, what's that?
That was 100% a pass off the track. But they don't class those things at turn one, especially because half the field went off at turn one. So, you know, they would have had to give out a million penalties, and you know you can get away with that kind of stuff. But yeah, Lando was really clever. He got the start that he wanted to get. I think he was even trying to have a go at Lewis Hamilton to turn four at one point, when he got Perez back after Perez got him into turn three. But he just was very, very clever and kept the lead. And then what was great was once he got himself far enough ahead from his competition, he realized he was having to go so fast to keep Perez and Bottas behind him. He literally waved them past.
Yep.
He's like, right, I've done my job. I've got my gap. Go on, you guys go finish your race now. But by that point, they were like 10 seconds behind Max and Lewis.
And he did a great job up till that point, but it was like 10 laps and it cost 14 seconds. So Perez off the back of Lewis Hamilton was 14 seconds by the time he got past, and he was able to hold that 14 seconds for most of that first stint, although obviously the front guys were kind of managing their tyres as well. But that kind of took the front two out of it, and this is going to be a real problem for Perez going forward, because Bottas as well, but Perez keeps finding himself on the back foot after a poor Saturday, and he's vulnerable to the likes of Norris and Sainz getting in there with nothing to lose, really, shots to nothing, and just wrecking his opening races. I think this is the third race, I think, where he's ended up behind one of those midfielders and stuck for the first stint.
Yeah, Perez definitely could have challenged Lewis today, because Red Bull had that straight line speed.
Yep.
And the two biggest overtaking zones have got a massive long straight and a DRS zone. So Perez really could have caused a problem for Lewis today, and Lando saved Lewis, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so I was putting it as Lando just ruined the race. But whilst we're talking, that doesn't count as an incident, but there were incidents in turn one. So whilst that's come up, let's play a little game that we've not got to play for quite a while. Whose fault is it? The game is called Whose Fault Is It and Why Was It Leclerc's? Because I do a little straw poll with our panel when we play this game, and I find out, I just go, Alex, whose fault do you think that thing was? And he'll go, oh, it was Leclerc. And I hadn't really watched the incident back in any kind of slow motion. Matt, whose fault do you think it was? Oh, yeah, Leclerc all day long. And in our WhatsApp chat, yeah, Leclerc. I'm like, okay, I can add, don't worry, I can add some balance to this, Alex. I'm going to look at the replay and I'm going to be pro Leclerc in this game. But he just like rejoined the track and just drifted right into three race cars.
It was the kind of thing that you'd have thrown penalties out for in our missed Apex iRacing series. It was a terrible, terrible rejoin. He just came across like he wasn't even there, because what he was trying to do was he was trying to pick up the slipstream from the back of Gasly and just misjudged it. And bearing in mind, this is one of the guys that we think is like the third best driver on the grid. Just completely misjudged the back of a car, smacked into the back of him, destroyed Gasly's race, destroyed his own front wing. And then because he had a good drive back, went on to be driver of the day, which I don't think he deserves.
Driver of the day, Matt.
Indeed. And minus all the things that he ran into, you could sort of argue that, yeah, he had a pretty good race. But the fact of the matter is that collision probably might well have cost him fifth place ahead of Norris.
Yeah, it could. And when we're talking about the constructors' title, I think that one's probably going to go all the way down to the wire. I haven't got the table in front of me, but I know they're kind of trading points at the moment. So especially that they're kind of, the Ferrari drivers are pretty level, whereas Norris is doing all the heavy lifting for McLaren at the moment. But Leclerc's got previous with that, Matt. You know, that incident with him and Vettel was very similar. That incident with Kimi Raikkonen later on in the race as well. He was just a wrecking ball coming through. And then people are like, oh yeah, driver of the day, because he overtook some folk that he himself put himself behind. Christian?
I'll call it a racing incident.
Oh, boo, that's the worst.
I'm sorry. But there's I know it's not allowed, but there's a small, the track has a small kink right there. And you have to follow, if you follow the road, you have to maybe just turn a little bit left. And that is what happened. It wasn't, I mean, they just hit. It was just a racing incident. Leclerc didn't try to take out his rear wheel.
I respect you. I'm frightened of your physicality. However, Matt, he fully just turned right. He just fully just turned into the rear of poor Gasly.
He did. Let's face it. I think when he gets excitable, he has a hard time judging exactly how big the car is that he's driving. But I have sympathy for Christian's argument that we could just sort of blame the natural characteristics of the track for that particular coming together.
Yeah, like Imola. It's like that Kinka Imola as well, and the Russell Bottas incident as well.
Exactly.
It can be a bit of an error generator side to side. Alex, no?
That wasn't what happened here. Yes, it could be that, but it's not actually what happened here. What happened here was he was it's not though, because what he was trying to do was duck underneath to pick up the slipstream to then try and get a launch into turn three. That's what he was trying to do, and he has misjudged it. That's what's happened. It's got nothing to do with that, King.
Okay, good. We're all blaming Leclerc except Christian, who's being neutral. What is it? What happens to a man to turn him so neutral? But the effect that had was Gasly was just trying to survive down to the next turn, and he got swamped, didn't he, Alex? Poor Gasly got swamped left and right, and I was looking at that trying to go, well, what could he have done? You know, I always try and blame myself in any kind of karting or sim racing thing. I go, well, what could I have done differently? I'm like, well, surely Gasly could have slowed and he could have pulled over. Why was he going into turn three, you know, going for it? He really wasn't. From the second it happened, he was just swamped with cars, and he ended up, okay, this is my take on it, Ricardo, I think, was a bit cheeky. Cut across his nose. Gasly's like, oh, I'm in trouble here. I just need to stay out of the way. He turns left, hits Giovinazzi, then hits Latifi. And I must admit, in real time in the race, Matt, I was going, blinking hell, Gasly. Like, do you know what? Go and hit the safety car on the way through as well. But it wasn't his fault at all.
No, it wasn't his fault. He was actually being incredibly safe. But the problem is the cars behind him didn't pick up that he had damage. So they were driving around him like he could make a turn as any normal Formula One car could make, when in fact there was no way he was going to, because he was missing his left rear wheel, basically.
Excellent. I think that might be our last whose fault is it? So that wasn't much of one. That was me getting excited about the game, but still, generally good driver standards. Even the Haases, have you got one, Alex? I was going to say, even the Haases managed to race wheel to wheel without hitting each other. And then eventually, I think the Haas pit wall made the right decision to just, let's pit one of them. Yeah. Why are you pitting your two young drivers that are recklessly locking brakes and swapping positions? Anything to do with them not hitting each other? No. it was. Alex?
We kind of half mentioned it, but Leclerc did exactly the same thing to Kimi Raikkonen as well. And broke part of Kimi Raikkonen's wing as well. Where again, he just came across. I think that was more a case of he'd gone past Raikkonen and pulled over too early. It's a bit worrying.
Yes.
Because it's a lot of misjudgment. And pretty any incident we've seen from Leclerc has seemed to have been slight misjudgment, which is a little bit worrying for someone who, again, we rate
very
really,
highly.
Really highly.
I saw comments.
And like very much. So it is a little bit telling, and I hope he manages to sort things out, because I don't want to see him go down that route of being someone who becomes a crasher.
I saw a lot of comments asking if Leclerc's car was the same size, whether he was suffering from ping issues, you know, whether he had some kind of latency issue. Christian?
One could think that Ferrari knew they had to have a good start because their car was really good in race trim, but didn't do good in qualifying trim. So if you have a car like that, you really want to get ahead at the start in Austria, because it can be quite tricky to overtake there.
Christian, what's your opinion on Ferrari in general? Are you a Ferrari sympathizer? Do you wish them well?
I want Ferrari to do good. I'm not a big fan of how they do business. I mean, I'm not a fan of the I don't mind cheating to win kind of philosophy, if you know what I mean.
Allegedly.
And I think, I'm not going to say that word. That's for you. and they have a history of that. But I think there's new times at Ferrari. I think Ferrari is doing really good. And I love to see Sainz and Leclerc do well. And I think there's like a new spirit within Ferrari these days.
Okay. So, Christian, are you classing this as a comeback, as a renaissance? Because my fear is that we are sort of damning them with faint praise, the richest team in F1. And we're doing a polite clap, potentially edging towards being the third best team.
I actually had them second and third in the last race when we did our predictions. So they sometimes surprised, but I was really surprised by how slow they were 2 weeks ago. But this week, it just happened for them. It looked good.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Ferrari has taken advantage of having back-to-back races at the same circuit. And instead of doing their normal Friday running, they essentially said, let's pretend we're testing this weekend. And so they spent all of Friday doing long runs and looking at the issues they had from Paul Ricard, which I will point out were almost entirely linked to their front tires. And now here we are at the Red Bull Ring, where it's a rear limited circuit. And to the surprise of absolutely no one, they have now done much better at a circuit that suits their car better. I think Binotto after the race was saying, well, you know, we think we've made some understandings, but I think the problem they have is going to be with them for the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they just understand better the circuits that they need to maximize their points at, would be sort of where he came down post-race.
Okay, Christian, are they fighting for the title in 2022?
I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen. I know you wonder.
Guess, man. Different.
Okay,
just
yes,
guess.
They are. Thank yes, they you. Are. I actually hope they are.
Matt.
Well, it's super duper exciting, at least to me and the three other people who care about this. But at the very last minute, Ferrari has chosen to go a different route with the split compressor turbocharger than every other engine manufacturer on the grid. They're going to keep them together. They think they have found something with their new engine team, and they're going a different route to everyone. So from that point alone, 2022 looks to be very, very interesting for Ferrari, because if they got those numbers wrong, they're toast for the next 3 years.
Okay, so things are looking a little bit encouraging for the Tifosi. You've got two young, great drivers, and maybe shaking off a little bit of that 2019-2020 monkey off your back. A quick note here, because Chris Collins has jumped in with a Max point that we didn't address. What do you think of this, Fangene? Max is now under investigation for doing a burnout while the race was still on. He's looking at a 10-place grid drop. I must admit, I thought that was super boss. It was like the olden days of like driving to the pit wall. But he basically stopped where the Red Bull mechanics were and lit up the tyres just after the start-finish straight. Yeah. Oh, did you not see it?
Is there a problem with that?
Well, it's
okay. I didn't know that.
Well, the thing is, it's just after the start finish straight, so you've got cars that are racing still coming through. So I think that might be where he falls back. Yeah, I've got that feeling as well. But normally, like I was thinking, well, they do donuts and stuff, but they normally go and find a little quiet spot once everybody's slowed down. So maybe
wouldn't the problem be slowing down, not the donuts?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, and slowing down unnecessarily.
I think so.
So is it not a case of once you cross the finish line, that is it? That's done. But I don't know. I guess people are still coming over the line at racing speed. So
I think actually there's a very vague explanation on how to do it. You have to act properly or something like that. Sorry, Alex.
That's right. It completely depends on how the rules are written. I didn't know that was a rule. So I'll be very interested to see how the rule is written. A 10-place grid penalty for that is super harsh. I will not go down well within the community.
No.
But if the rule says something about it, then rules are rules.
I would not want that to have an effect on this championship, Matt. That would be my only thing.
And I would agree with you wholeheartedly. It looks like the chat room is mostly in on that. It's a warning. It can't happen again.
Yeah, warning
will be.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. A warning. Good. I don't want anything exterior like that deciding this championship because it's too good. So that. I know this is a topic for the news show, but talking about minimum pit stops, I don't agree with the Mercedes justification for it. But I've said on here many times, I'm not a fan of pit stops being a thing that decides stuff. So today, what if we had had a situation where the Perez mess up on the tyre was actually with the Verstappen pit stop, and it had been a little bit worse, and it had let Hamilton just get ahead in a position that they hadn't earned, and Max had ended up losing this race over Janet on the left rear jack, not being able to quite locate a nut. That doesn't do it for me. I'm not saying that there's not a skill in pit stops. I'm just saying that doesn't butter my bread, Matt. That's not how I want races decided.
Well, I can understand that. It's always frustrating when equipment failure causes that kind of result. But Red Bull spend a lot of money making faster pit equipment than Mercedes. And this is, I don't know, is this the first time I've seen it go wrong and actually affect a position in the race, at least this season? No, quite possibly. And yeah, it bothers me not because they wanted to say, we think they have a baked in unfair advantage and we want to level the playing field. But they said safety, and I have yet to see Red Bull release any cars without their wheels attached, even though we've certainly seen other teams do it. So it just, the basic justification, I think, is really what gets at me most.
All right, let's move on. Alex, good news, man. What a performance. And this is not sarcastic. I just want to drive that pain home for you. What a performance by George Russell. I mean, he was really on it. He was eighth, man. He was eighth in a Williams with, like, not a ton of attrition. Not only that, he was attacking Fernando Alonso in the Alpine, and it was going so well. And there was just this collective moan. I think the British Isles might have just sunk slightly when they suddenly had the news that, I mean, I don't even know what happened. Something about a lack of hydraulic pressure or a lack of pneumatic pressure. But Alex, exactly how crushed were you?
Oh, I screamed no at the television. Especially because, yeah, as you said, he was attacking Fernando Alonso. I was looking at his lap times. He was around the same kind of pace as Bottas at the time, which was really funny. And I was just like, yes, he's finally going to have his proper chance at points. And then that pit stop just went on and on and on. I'm like, no. And then he was back in the following lap. And then when, you know, that happens, you know, it's all over. And the poor kid must have been absolutely crushed, because his performance this weekend has been exemplary, and it was cruelly, cruelly stolen away.
Matt, he will never score a point at Williams. I put some frogs and a turnip into a cauldron, and then I let it evaporate, and then a wizard came out of that, and he declared it to me. Russell will never get a point at Williams, he said.
It does seem to be that way. I was really surprised that he was as high as he was in the order.
Yeah, it was mental.
That late into the race, I expected the tires to be eaten and for him to go backwards, as is always seems to be the case whenever he starts in a reasonable position. I was like, no, he's competitive. Look at that. And then the radio call came. We have a reliability issue. We need you to go faster. Plan B. And that's really odd, because usually speeding up when you have a reliability problem is like, those can be at odds. But he came in, and sure enough, it was the pneumatic. The valves have pneumatic lifters. They're charged with, I think, nitrogen bottle. And sometimes it leaks and needs to be topped up. They topped it up, sent him back out. Didn't work. They brought him back in, sent him back out. And before you know it, he's parked in the garage. But this does open an interesting door.
Which is?
At least according to Sam Collins, which is, you know how Mercedes have been all about the reliability upgrade that Honda just did.
Can they do a reliability upgrade that just happens to add like 20 horsepower?
One never knows, but certainly one might think that door has at least been cracked open for Mercedes, should they wish to spend the time and money to walk through it.
And I think proof of the curse here is that, you know, not only did he have a bit of bad luck, but like that is a fault that no one has ever heard of. It's never affected any race driver ever. I think the next time he's going to be in with a shout at the points, Matt, it's going to be a meteor. A meteor is going to come down and just puncture his tire like 3 yards from the line.
Or a dinosaur will materialize.
A dinosaur will materialize. That was going to be my next suggestion. Yes. Poor Russell. Anyway, okay. Let's go on down the grid. Oh, I'm so sorry, Matt. Ocon versus Alonso. Someone asked me on Twitter. Oh, it was Anil. Our friend Anil said he couldn't remember what we had predicted for the Alpine drivers. And we did have quite a ferocious pre-season debate. I said that Alonso would come in, and I said spank him, I think. I didn't mean to use such an evocative term. At the time, we didn't know that the drivers changing teams would struggle as much as they have. So I think, you know, it looked like Ocon had the measure of him. Now that he's settled in, I am going to stick to my preseason prediction. I think Alonso accelerates from here, and he certainly just seems to have had the measure. What? Tell you what, put it this way. You've got to admit Ocon had a rough race. Alonso's fighting right up front. He was in the Stroll train. He's fighting Aston Martins. Ocon was fighting, what, Giovinazzi? What happened, man?
Well, so let's be clear. Alonso finished in P9 only because Leclerc took Gasly out. Otherwise, I believe he would have been in 10th place at best.
So a point.
Some people might argue he might have been able to hold Stroll off if Stroll hadn't got him at the start. 50-50 on that. But what I am here to say is I don't think Alpine necessarily have any idea what's going on with their own car. As far as the Alonso Ocon battle, well, I think Ocon dominated through the first part of the season. Not a surprise. Alonso not used to the team. We're seeing Alonso come into his own. But what's really interesting to me, and by interesting, I mean bad, is that they don't seem to be able to produce a car that both of their drivers can drive into the points. And as proof of that, I know from chatting with our friend Summers, they were running pretty radically different setups, at least yesterday, or at least on Friday when I saw the pictures taken. And that starts to remind me of that season when Button and Hamilton were at McLaren.
Oh, yeah.
Spa. And suddenly Hamilton started complaining a lot about how the direction of the car was going. And I do just wonder, in making things better for Alonso, if they've not made them a bit worse for Ocon.
Christian.
They are definitely fighting with the car, but maybe something good will come of trying two different directions, I think. But I just wanted to make a comment on Alonso in general, because after his qualifying lap, he was calling back and was just so happy, and he just put it all in there and stuff like that. I think he brings some positivity to his racing. I think it's lovely to see Fernando Alonso, who is perhaps one of the greatest drivers ever, just finding his home again and dwelling in it, because he doesn't do very bad mistakes or anything. He just makes the most of it, and I like seeing that. Same with Vettel.
I have to say, I've always been an Alonso fan. I don't agree with all his outbursts. I don't agree with the GP2 engine and stuff. It seemed like he was sort of biting the hand that fed him. But Christian, I've always had just a general good impression. Like, deep down, I feel like he's good for motorsport in general. You know, he's very much at developing like youth karting and stuff like that. He's got his own kart school. He just seems like a good egg to me. I've always been an Alonso fan.
When I was on this on Miss Apex,
this one
start year, yeah, on
yeah.
this, you know, this podcast,
this, podcast right here, yeah.
This is Miss Apex. Isn't
it is.
It?
Yes.
Oh, great. Because. Yeah. Cool. I found some old quotes from Fernando Alonso, and he was doing like a Twitter AMA when he returned to Formula One with McLaren. And someone asked him, what's the best thing about you and what's the worst thing about you? And his answers were good, punctuality, bad, distrustful.
Oh.
And that is his own reflection of Fernando Alonso. So, I mean, things have happened with this guy. He's just like we've seen with Max Verstappen and Hamilton. They've grown up in the spotlight, and we've seen all their bad sides. But I think what is left of Fernando Alonso is worth appreciating, definitely.
Yeah, but Van Gene, he got mugged by Stroll, didn't he? He got mugged by Stroll.
Yeah, he got done by Stroll, and a beautiful move from Stroll. They fought all the way through the first part of the lap, and then Stroll went around the outside of him at turn five. And I was like, you don't go around the outside there. And he used his space really, really well. He stopped Alonso from taking that space and just parked his car there and was really, really good. And we don't see that often from Stroll. He's not usually the fightiest of people, and it's great to see. To be honest, when you're talking about Alonso today, he could be put to blame for a little bit of the incident between Gasly and Leclerc. Because
for making it eight wide.
Because it was Alonso who made it three wide in turn one, which then forced the other two drivers off the circuit, which then they had to come back across. It was still a good move from Alonso, and Alonso is a great racer. He's never been a favourite. Oh, actually, he was a favourite of mine until 2007, when he decided to completely lose his mind. But it's always been his attitude for me that's been a problem. His race, his racecraft, his racing ability, his speed has never been a problem.
No.
But it's just his attitude for me.
Okay, so with Matt, my motivation, Matt, at the beginning of the season was I felt if Alonso got back to peak Alonso, he was going to be the number one driver there. My only issue was if he couldn't get up to speed. Is it fair to say if Alonso is getting up to peak Alonso, Ocon is definitely in for a big fight and possibly a career-defining fight?
Well, I mean, I suppose we could ask Stoffel van Dorn about that. Ocon's already done better than he did against Alonso.
Okay, set the bar higher.
Actually, van Dorn did about as well against Alonso as anyone did. So they're tied on quali right now. It's four apiece.
Mm-hmm.
And Ocon, despite having the DNF, is still one up in terms of race finishes. So it's hardly a comprehensive beating of him by Alonso. If if it's all Alonso the entire rest of the season, yeah, you might have a point. But I would be surprised at that, because I'm still giving the edge to Ocon because his knowledge of the tires is newer and deeper than Alonso, who'd spent 2 years out of the sport. I think he gets betrayed by those tires and he will have a harder time managing them. But really, to me, the issue is Alpine itself. I mean, they were supposed to be best of the rest, and they're barely on the radar right now.
Yes, I quite agree. Two more topics I want to cover before we go to the podium. Firstly, it was nice to see Kimi fighting up there and getting 11th, which is a really good result, just out of the points. But it was more that in the olden days, I could not imagine a Ferrari customer car putting up that much resistance. It would normally be a case of, yep, the red car's coming through. Oh, I locked up. Oh, I've pulled over. Whereas Kimi was giving it some. He was properly fighting. He was fighting Leclerc, got a great kind of cutback and drag away. So it was just nice to see them fighting. And actually, the Alfa Romeos, Christian, just, they looked fine. Like, I'm going to damn them with faint praise, but they looked okay.
They looked really good, I think. And actually, I've put the exact same note on my page here. Raikkonen is just this old guy. He's, what is he, 56 or something like
57
that?
57
and
in June, yeah.
Driving his head off still. I love that. He's so committed and he's so Kimi Raikkonen as he was always. I love that. But I wanted to mention one thing we haven't talked about.
Go for it.
Daniel Ricciardo's engine problems, because he had a major start and the race would have been different for McLaren if he had been able to keep up in the top 10. Everything would have been different for McLaren. But, and I'm not even sure what happened. Do you know, Matt?
Alex? No, Alex. I think Alex knows what happened there.
Oh, Alex. Yeah, so he was he made sixth place at the start, which was great, and he was then going to push on, and then he had a sensor issue, which lost him a load of power, and then while he's trying to change all the buttons and do everything to get the power back, everyone just swamped past him, and he just got stuck, which is a real shame because he could have done something impressive today, and I'm worried for Danny Ric. I mean, I very much sit with. Form is temporary, class is permanent when it comes to Daniel Ricciardo, and I'm a big fan. But he's got to do something soon. All the other new drivers are starting to feel at home, and he is the only one who doesn't really look at home yet. And I'm worried about that, especially because his teammate is absolutely smashing it out of the park week in, week out, every session.
I just got corrected that it wasn't a cutback. No, I meant a fight back. He held it around the outside. But what do you think, Alex? What does it take for Ricciardo? Realistically, I don't think he's going to start dominating, say, have a three-race run where he's getting best of the rest and being better than Norris. I can't see it happening. But we're kind of getting into the, well, as the number two McLaren driver, what is a good result? Do you know what I mean? That's the mentality that we're now thinking, which I don't think many people were predicting. And it's a bit, it's getting sad for Ricciardo fans.
Yeah, the report seems to be with regards to Ricciardo is
trust the car.
The report seems to be is that he isn't trying to mold the car to himself. He is trying to adapt to the car the way it is, and it is just taking him a little bit of extra time. And because of that, he's not quite comfortable yet. I think he has an issue with the brakes, which is also slowing him down massively, which is one of his biggest strong points, is being on the brakes. It's something that took him a while at Renault as well. He'll get there. Just, he's got to hurry up.
Okay, look, Matt, if there's any season where we're going to give him slack, it's this one. I know it's 8 races in, but that's not 8 races compared to a normal season. 8 races here for a new driver and a new team is kind of like 2-3 races in a normal season.
Yeah, so first of all, we should consider the extra limited testing we had this season. Secondly, Alex, if you really just said his issue with the brakes is slowing him down massively, congratulations, because that was good.
And that's what brakes are for, slowing you down massively. Yeah.
And I think the good news for Ricciardo fans is that on the radio after the race, the team, his engineer was like, we think we know where the pace is. Like, I think we have solved this problem for you. And so hopefully we'll see a much better race out of him the coming weekend.
Just a short comment. Remember Grosjean mentioning that when he started in IndyCar, he drove the car for a lap and he came into the pits and were like, How's that, guys? What a smile on his face. He thought he had just killed it. And he was 3.2 seconds off. So speed is relative, even though he came from Formula One and he felt like he did it maximum, but he didn't.
Alex.
Yeah, the thing you just have to remember with Ricciardo, he hasn't all of a sudden become a terrible driver overnight.
No.
You know, last season, you know, he was up there with top five driver in the whole series, and he's been around a long time. He will figure it out. I know I've said it before, he just needs some time.
Okay. Well, I'm less confident than you that he will figure it out relative to Norris, but he might figure it out enough to have a good season and help in that McLaren versus Ferrari fight, because right now they've got one hand tied behind their back and Ferrari have got two drivers. They had the driver of the day today. Everybody stop voting for driver of the day that came back from the back of the pack. Stop rewarding qualifying badly, then overtaking a bunch of folk, or making a mistake and then overtaking a bunch of folk. That's all I've got to say as we go to the podium. And that brings us near the end of the Styrian Grand Prix, the Steiermark Grand Prix. Matt, I get confused when they have these double headers and then they name it something different, like after the place. So with Silverstone, it was the 75th anniversary Grand Prix. I could handle that. If there was two Silverstones this year, presumably the second one would be the Toaster Grand Prix. That would be good. Well, that would be good, Alex, wouldn't it? If there's another Silverstone this year, if they end up substituting in, wouldn't they call it the Toaster Grand Prix? They've got to, surely. They can't call it the Northampton Grand Prix. That would be rubbish.
I don't think people would understand what toaster is, especially when it's spelled with a W.
Yeah, and it's spelled Towcester, so that would be brilliant. Yeah. And I would insist on calling it the Towcester Grand Prix, and people would get very, very upset with me. An interesting and fascinating Grand Prix that didn't quite spark and explode, but I am fully expecting the second Grand Prix, which is the actual Austrian Grand Prix, to be a little bit different. I think we've got a step softer tyres, haven't we, Matt?
Absolutely correct. Even softer tyres that will last even fewer laps. Yeah. So maybe a two-stop if you have to start on the soft tyre.
It just opens up some kind of options. Maybe Norris won't ruin it this time. Maybe Perez will just have that little bit of an extra run. He mentioned after Paul Ricciard, he said, if I've got another Paul Ricciard, I know what happened on Saturday. Like, I figured it out in the race. So with two Austrias, maybe he can figure it out on Saturday. He's got to be third. He's got to be third on that Austrian Grand Prix grid to start having a real impact.
Yeah, but personally, I'm looking forward to what's going to take Russell out of the points this time around.
Yeah, we said a meteor or dinosaur. One of those two things. Excellent. Well, I certainly enjoyed my Sunday, and this is the part of the podcast where we give out awards. But please go and follow Alex Van Gien. He's all right. Vangeen. Van Gien. Go and follow him. You do YouTube videos, so search for Alex Van Gien there. Yeah.
Yep. Done some YouTube videos. I've done a couple on racecraft, and it's obviously based around iRacing. But to be fair, it goes for racecraft in all aspects. So if you want to go and listen to me talk about racecraft and
watch,
how all that,
listen
and watch me talking about racecraft. Go to my YouTube, click on there. Always give the likes, the subscribes, click the bell notification, and I've even got a Discord now. So
I forgot to say that. I forgot to say all that. Like and subscribe, guys. Like and subscribe this video. Subscribe to the channel. We have 10,800 subscribers on this YouTube channel. That's frightening. That really is frightening. Thank you so much to everybody who has shared stuff. Go and follow us on social media at Miss Apex F1. Me at Spanners Ready. Don't bother following that. Just me at Spanners Ready. And you can support the show, patreon.com/MissedApex. The links to everything we talk about magically appear in the show notes, because Matt manages that. So actually, okay, do follow Matt at MattPT55. There you go. I forgot that you were useful and that I liked you.
Well, every now and then I do have something that I can do, yes.
Excellent. So at MattPT55, Matt's wife's books are also linked in the show notes at A Weaver Write, so you can go check those out. Christian's very difficult with social media, so I tend not to bother.
You can have my email.
What? Really? Okay, yeah, go on.
I mean, that's my contact info.
Well, I tell you what, you can email Christian at
Really? I was kidding.
Oh, okay. Well, you
but,
can.
I'll make up one up for next time.
Okay, fair enough.
Promise.
But you can always email us at feedback@mistapex.net. There we go. feedback@mistapex.net. I tell you what we do now. We give out a positive award. It's the thing of the weekend. Listen to how upbeat that music is, guys, because we're going to be super positive in that. Let's go with Matt first, because normally we make Matt go last and we all steal his choices. But this time, Matt, you can go first. What was your thing of the weekend?
Carlos Sainz.
Carlos Sainz, yeah.
He drove a beautiful race. He made no mistakes and he went 40 laps on his medium tires, came in, and had he not had gotten stuck behind Hamilton, who he wound up passing around lap 65 and unlapping himself, he might well have taken the fight to Norris and made the end of the race even more exciting than it already kind of was, because Perez was catching Bottas.
And that was interesting that he wasn't sure whether he could or should unlap himself from Hamilton.
Yeah, the team were like, yes, please do this thing. Because he was there for a number of laps, and it really might have changed the complexion of the race in the midfield had he just bombed past Lewis as soon as he had the pace.
You know how we've said all the drivers that switch teams struggled except Sainz? That we kind of assumed that Sainz had just got up to speed. Could it be that Sainz was also struggling? It's just that was him struggling, and at some point he's going to stretch his legs? Could be.
Well, if that's the case, man, I cannot wait to watch what happens at Ferrari next season.
Yeah, and I'll have to eat my words because I've never rated Sainz. So if that does happen, if he stretches ahead of Leclerc, I'll just have to just go, yeah, stuff that one up. Wrong on that one. Alex Van Gien, what was your thing of the weekend?
It's a boring one, but it's Lando. He bossed it in qualifying. He hasn't made a mistake. Mm-hmm. He's been on top of everything. He controlled a Red Bull and a Mercedes until he decided to let them go.
That's a good point, isn't it?
He's just been imperious this weekend. Fantastic drive.
There's no doubt, is there, that if you put him in one of those top two teams, you feel like he'd be in the mix now. Is he ready or is it too soon?
Yeah, I think he's ready because, let's put it this way, he was up against Sainz, beat Sainz. Sainz, as you've said, you underestimated him. Sainz gave Max a hard time. And that's really forgotten. I know I've mentioned it a bunch of times, but he gave Max Verstappen a hard time. And Lando has come in and beaten Sainz and is now showing Danny Ricciardo a very clear set of heels.
Yep.
And as I said a second ago, was able to control a Merc and a Red Bull.
It's a clean,
you know, the kid is superb.
A clean set of heels is the catchphrase. You wouldn't be very good on catchphrase, that TV program. Let's see the chat room. Mark Greenow points out that it is, of course, kevin@denmark.com. That's your email address. Sorry, Christian.
I'll make that. I'll promise that. I'm not sure I can do it with .com, but I'll try.
Sorry for the 8 times I've accidentally called you Kevin. Matt?
The chat room would also very much like to bring up Gunther Steiner giving Mazepin a top.
A spinning top. Oh, yeah. Okay. I need to address this quickly. I need to address this. Stand by, people who don't like Nikita Mazepin, because there is going to be a concerted media push coming to make you think that Nikita Mazepin is funny, likable, and talented. It is absolutely coming. You're laughing, Christian, but we've seen these pushes happen, and they know who to target. There was a simultaneous charm offensive for convincing everybody that Lance Stroll was not a paid driver, a genuine talent. That might be true, but every F1 journalist, commentator, and an outlet that said it all realised it around the same week. And I'm assuming that gift baskets were a part of that. Look at the huge build-up for the McLaren something special coming. It's a slightly different colour for Monaco. There is that charm campaign coming, Alex, and you are going to start seeing the lighter side of Nikita Mazepin. Just warning.
Yeah, Netflix are doing an extended series of Drive to Survive on him. Apparently it's a spin-off.
Don't do the crofty joke that he
that
did
was on that was going to be my thing of the weekend, and I'm really glad you made it possible for me to bring that up.
Yeah, that did make me chuckle, but then again, I am a 40-year-old dad.
What made me laugh was Crofty said it, didn't laugh, said it was funny, but obviously found it hilarious, but obviously can't laugh because it's based at Mazepin, but still had to get it out. But I agree with you.
I just wanted to ask you, Spanners, that is how branding works.
Yeah,
and that is how everything in the world works, and also Brexit.
Oh, the thing I have no strong opinion of one way or the other. How interesting. But anyway, I'm just telling you it's coming. I've seen it starting to bubble up and it's going to be there. Christian, I have to ask you a question. So what was your thing of the weekend?
It's going to be boring because it's basically what Alex said. He's just doing a brilliant job, Lando Norris. And it could have been Russell if he had gone through and completed the race. It probably would have been Russell. But again, he's the leader of the midfield. And he's like the leader of the midfield alone. And that takes big cojones.
I'm going to give it to Max Verstappen for controlling the race. Now, that might not seem like such a big deal, but we just wondered what Max Verstappen would be like in this situation with a title contending car able to control the pace up front. Turns out he's pretty good at it. And I think in the races where Red Bull turn up with a package as competitive as this, he's got the ability to do it. He's got the ability to have Lewis Hamilton second guessing. Lewis Hamilton sat there going, right, what should I do? What should I do, guys? And the Mercedes pit wall had already settled for second. They settled for second half a race before Lewis Hamilton did. And that was down in no small measure to how Max Verstappen managed and controlled the race. He scored more than a victory today. He scored an on-track victory because now Hamilton knows that when he's got the advantage, he's able to press it home. So I'm going to give it to Max Verstappen for that controlled win. Oh, we've got a bad thing award. All too positive. Let's do the thing where we judge people who are at the very top of an elite sport.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
I like this bit, and I'm going to go first. I'm going to give it to the AlphaTauri pit wall. A miscommunication with Yuki Tsunoda led to them not doing better. They said they were unable to communicate the tyres and what state the tyres were in. So it's interesting with the language barrier, isn't it, Christian? Because like you Danes and most Europeans speak excellent English. English is generally the language of F1, maybe Italian if you're with one of the Italian teams. But when you've got someone coming from, say, Japan, where English isn't, like you don't need English to get by day to day in the same way like all Danes speak excellent English, shouldn't they just have like a translator on the pit wall and just let Yuki communicate in Japanese, at least at first?
I'm going to tell you this. One of my best friends is from Japan. His entire family is from Japan. And I told him that there's a new guy in Formula One from Japan. You should check him out. And his first question was, does he speak English?
Yeah.
Because that is such a huge thing in Japan. If you speak English, you're one of the very few. And in Japan, it's all about you don't do anything you're not good at. That is just not how life works. So you don't speak English if you're not good at it. So Yuki Tsunoda is struggling with his English, but he's doing an excellent job.
Oh, yeah, no, he's doing an excellent job in that context. But when you're doing those real split-second decisions and disseminating information, surely it's not going to cost a lot just to have a Japanese translator on the radio. Just to, if nothing else, just to give them an option. You know, just to give Yuki that option to go, right, in that clutch situation, I'm just going to speak Japanese and the message will still get through.
I think it would kill your entire communication line if you had a translator in there. And also, I think it would be bad for him to speak Japanese in the car. He should adapt to that English situation, I think.
Fair enough. Matt, you've got a comment on this?
Yeah. So I thoroughly enjoyed him post-race going, oh, yes, I forgot to update my tire status. And the team got very excited about it, which was just, you know, he's like, oh, well, it was a thing I was supposed to do, but it didn't really matter that much. But then the team got all worried about it, which was just fun because, of course, you know,
normally
the shoe is on the other foot, so to speak.
I just need to adjust quickly because Sydney says in the chat, his English is better than most people's second language. Absolutely. Like as a Brit, no way are we criticizing other nations' ability to have a second language. I'm just talking about the practical issues that might bring in this situation. Matt, who missed the apex for you?
Bottas. He had a fantastic race, but were it not for the spin that he had in the pit lane, it would have been an entirely different thing today. And so Yeah, I could blame Mercedes for that, I suppose. But at the end of the day, he was the one behind the wheel.
A lot of people didn't think that should be a penalty. Did we cover it before? Yeah, I think it's definitely a penalty. No, we did cover that. That's fine. I was happy with that being a penalty entirely. Who hasn't done a missed the apex yet? Alex or Christian? Alex first, then Christian.
For me, missed the apex was Derek at Williams, who put the hydraulic system together and made it leak for poor George Russell.
Oh, wow. You're really hurting from the Russell thing, aren't
Very
you?
Much so.
Oh, it's one of those failures, though, where you can't account for every failure. So until a failure starts showing up on your books and your fault reports, you don't generally tend to address that in your meetings. Now, that will be a thing that will be part of engineering meetings. Before that, poor Derek, he's concentrating on the things that normally go wrong. So let's ease up on poor Derek. Christian, who missed the apex for you?
I've seen this in the chat tonight as well, and I see it everywhere. Just people complaining about the politics ruining Formula One. I mean, it's a bit like saying there shouldn't be grass in football. It's such a basic element of Formula One, because you have these people with the same rules, and eventually someone's going to cheat, and then you have to create a system where you can complain about the ones cheating, and that is just the ball who's going to keep spinning, and that is the nature of Formula One. So I'm just embracing the politics, and I find it funny. It's part of the game. But you constantly see people complaining about it. I'm out. I'm not watching Formula One anymore. And Toto is a cheater. And I mean, it's just...
It's the same in soccer, right down from players protesting against the referee to people highlighting, oh, that player's wage cap has been exceeded. Those contract talks were not necessary. All the way, you know, over to like Kabaddi, where people are going. But he didn't hold his breath. He was saying Kabaddi while breathing in and out. Oh, don't get that reference. Go and search Kabaddi, Trans World Sport. Okay, so the Pony Award.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
I can't think of anybody deserving of a Pony Award. Can you, Matt?
Mercedes' ongoing PR offensive to get the rules changed in their favor.
Okay, fair enough. But like I said, I don't think they're doing anything too different to what Red Bull do and what the other teams do. Do they? Are they?
No, and I think we would have or may have given them equal stick back in the day when they did, so.
Okay, fair enough. So that'll be a pony. Van Gene, who gets the Pony Award for you?
I guess I could give it to Lewis Hamilton for doing a really good impression of Red Bull for the last 7 years, talking about the fact that the Red Bull was too fast in a straight line.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, I think actually the whole of the Mercedes team did accept they were beat today. I you know, they did their best race. And they accepted that the Red Bull just had the measure of them. Do we have any other Pony Awards? I think everybody was fairly well behaved on the comms. All right, in that case, I'll say to you guys, thank you very much for joining us at Missed Apex, especially our patrons. You're our absolute favourites. Patreon.com/MissedApex. Get access to the streams that we only do for patrons, even the ones that go out later. Come and join us in our patron Slack group. It's amazing to be there on race day, and I hang out in there as well and have lots of chats on a variety of subjects. There's like 30 channels, lots and lots of fun. But mostly, you're the guys that have enabled us to get to 50th in the US sports iTunes charts. I still can't believe that. But it is all powered by love and money. So if you want to be part of the money part of that, www.patreon.com/MissedApex. It'll be the first link underneath the show notes in your podcast app. And please do share the show. Our second favorite, apart from our patrons, is probably the people who join us in the live chat, Matt, and we have an award for them, and it's this one.
Comment of the week.
Oh, that is Mrs. Spanner singing Comment of the Week. Did you catch her latest jingle, Matt, where she sung her song on my videos? And my video series, my new video series I'm starting, you can see the first one on Twitter, is questions that are easily answered by nearby signs. Go and check that out on my Twitter feed. And it's an incredibly catchy tune that has been in my head for 4 days since she did it. So, Matt, who is the winner of Comment of the Week?
Just a winner, or shall I read a couple of potentials?
Okay, so when I say give me three, you give me 17. I thought if I say read zero and just give me the winner, you might limit it to four.
Right. Okay, I can do that. Paolo Verri, Russell showed he's ready to take Bottas' seat. He already has the same level of luck.
Okay. Ouch. All right. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to bring that curse to Mercedes. Have Mercedes fully considered the impact of bringing the George Russell curse to Mercedes? That's what I want to know.
Good question. We have Jaco Ligdom. Rosberg for race director. Imagine the perpetual entertainment generating machine, green F1.
He is such a stirrer, is Rosberg. Whether you like him or not on Sky Sports, he is like fully looking for trouble.
Avine Widge finally giving me a little bit of grief for my Ocon Fossey stance.
Yeah.
Alonso Oconed him.
Ooh, that, would you like some aloe vera?
No, I'm old enough that it doesn't really bother me all that much. And did I have one more?
I don't know.
Yes, and a special shout out to Jerome, whose comment I will not read live on the air, but it did make me giggle. I'll just say that.
Oh, well, good. Okay, who's the winner out of those? And it can't be the one that you can't read out, just to clarify.
Oh, I'm very well aware of that. It's tough. I would give it to Avine, but puns aren't allowed. Paolo Verri, congratulations. You have won with Russell showed us he is ready to take Bottas' seat. He already has the same level of luck.
So savage.
Comment of the week.
And also, it's too soon. Poor Van Geen is sitting there suffering, and that comment comes in. It was too soon. It's okay. It turns out he wasn't paying attention. But do go and follow him on Twitter, at Alex Van Geen. Go and email Christian, kevin@denmark.com. You can email the show, feedback@missedapex.net. Follow Matt @missedapexf1. Me @spannersready. The show @missedapexf1. We're on TikTok. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on YouTube. Please come and find us. And do join us on Tuesday as well for our news pickup show. And join us next Sunday for our Austrian Grand Prix race review. We'll be here at 8 p.m. UK time. Wherever you find us next, all I'd ask is that you work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.